Viewers, listeners, welcome to another episode of Blighty Talks Bricks. Today is the start of season 5 for us, so this is actually our 41st episode. So I'm a little bit shocked we've got this far in this journey. My guest today is a legend of the game of golf, for sure. She will be our first female professional golfer we've had on the show. She turned professional back in 1987 after a very successful amateur career. I see she's looking at me out in the corner of her eye. She's actually won golf events all over the world on 29 occasions. Now plies her trade on the Senior Legends Tour in the States and has won 3 major titles, the last one being last year, being the US Senior Women's Open. I think you're probably gathering she's really good at golf. She's also a pundit on Sky Sports, and I recently saw her at the Ladies British Open doing a sterling job on that. But in addition to all of those lovely things, and I've known her a number of years, she's a smashing human being. She's a lovely lady. She's great company, lovely to be around. So I'm very honoured to have Trish Johnson on Blighty Talks Bricks. Trish, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. You sure you're talking about me when you say all this? Well, you've done very well there, you really have.
Well, I'll be honest, I didn't have to search hard to find that. That was all there. It is some career, isn't it? Be honest. I know it's difficult. I know you're quite humble anyway, but it's an amazing career, isn't it?
Honestly, you make it sound better than it feels it has been. When you hear it, I guess hearing that about someone else, you'd think, oh, that's pretty decent. But I've always felt, and I said this a number of times, that I've underachieved. It felt very much like that. But I think it's the era I was brought up in all honesty. You know, I had the superstars. I had the Lauras, Ali Nicholas's, Helen Alfredson's, Lotta Neumann's, you know, all major winners. So I think to a certain extent, because I haven't won a major, won a senior major, but it's not, it's not the same thing. I always feel like I've underachieved a bit, really. I felt like I could have done a lot more. But, you know, I've had a lot of fun, put it that way. So it's been a hell of a life.
Well, I think you're being hard on yourself, but I think that's a trait of winners. I think that's a trait of anyone that does well in anything, but you're being hard on yourself. How and why golf? I mean, it's back in the day. What made you get into golf?
Just family, really. Lived in Westwood Ho in North Devon, and 3 older brothers, all who play golf. My dad played golf. And my youngest brother, I'm the youngest, Alex, 3 years older than me. When he started playing, we used to play everything together. We sort of played tennis, badminton, football, and then Alex started playing golf. My middle brother, Brian, was a professional for probably about 5 or 6 years. And so when Al starts playing golf, I tagged along with him, really, and started from there. And obviously, Dad loved the game. Rest in peace, Pops, but pretty useless, but he loved it. And he was so competitive.
Was he?
Yeah, because he was a really good footballer, my dad. He used to play for the Arsenal Juniors, so that's where from. You know, my love of the Arsenal. So, we live right by a golf club, and a very, very special golf club at that, Royal North Devon. So really, yeah, just started from there. And I don't know, it was weird, really. I, as much as I loved other sports, I was pretty good at, you know, most sort of, especially tennis. Played a lot of tennis, had a lot of sort of county coaching for tennis. But back in the 70s, early 70s, getting from Westwood Ho to anywhere was
difficult. I think it still is.
It's not, yeah. No, that's also true. But, I mean, you even get to somewhere like Exeter, and I was going to have county coaching, and it was, you know, give up everything else. And Dad just sort of said to me, what do you want to do? And I said, oh, I want to play football, I want to play tennis, I want to play badminton, I want to play golf. So just carried on that way, really.
Was you just naturally good at golf? Or did you feel you had to... You've got to work at it to be good at anything, but did it come easy?
I think other sports, if I'm honest, tennis and badminton and football came a lot easier, probably. I always knew I was going to be a professional golfer from the age of 13. I must have, when I look back now, I must have thought I was, you know, it must have been fairly easy. I was quite a natural, but I was tiny when I was a kid. I was really tiny.
You had a little growth spurt later on, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. I mean, I remember playing the English girls, my first English girls at Chelmsford. My dad took me. And I managed, I bless him, I had him wrapped around my little finger because golf was his thing. And I was like, there was a golf bag. It was a big, huge, like professional golf bag in the pro shop. And it was blue, It was blue and white, actually. It was
really?
Wrong colour.
Why have you just sworn at
me? I don't know. And I remember saying to him, oh, Dad, if you buy him that golf bag, I'll win. You know, I'll do it. And he bought me this bag. Well, it
Did
was
you
bigger
win?
Than me. Of course I didn't. I was playing against, you know, 17, 18-year-olds. But it just always was something I think I was always going to do. Why golf rather than tennis? Don't know, because I love tennis. But and funny enough, you'll find an awful lot of professional women, especially golfers, they're all really good tennis players.
Oh, really?
Annika Sorenstam, Lotta Neumann, Laura, everybody, you know, played a lot of tennis in their youth and a lot of
now
players.
I know why I'm no good at golf, because I'm not very good at tennis either. It all makes sense now. It all makes sense. So you say at 13 you know you're going to be a pro. Do you then realise that every time mum, dad by the sounds of it, is driving you from, as you say, a very difficult place in the UK to get somewhere else, do you feel under extra pressure then? Because you don't want to let your mum and dad down. You don't want to let yourself down. You know that you've got this idea what you want to be. Does it make it more pressure? Maybe that against some of the kids that are just good at golf but have not mapped out to be a professional?
No, because I don't think I ever voiced it at all. I just think I always knew. I think I was 7 handicap at 13. So I always sort of thought that was going to happen. I never voiced it to anybody, really. As far as mum and dad were concerned, it's quite funny, actually, because they were incredible. They were so supportive the whole way through my amateur career. Apart from one time, I remember we were living in Porthcawl and I was playing the English girls. It was my last year and I was the favourite to win. And it was in Bath and I got knocked out first or second round or something, you know. Right. So I went back home and I walked into the living room. And I can say this because neither of them are here anymore. They hate this.
Yeah, trust me, they just still watch over you.
Be careful. I know you're listening up there. And it was the most extraordinary thing. It was I got, hello. And I thought, it's a bit weird.
What have I done?
What have you done, actually? No, more to the point, yeah. And I thought, no, that can't be. And I brought it up with them quite a few times afterwards, and they both sort of, we didn't do that. They must have been so disappointed.
Yeah.
But honestly, they weren't disappointed for themselves. They weren't like that at all. I don't really know quite what, but I only remember my mum once saying to me, And it was another tournament, I got knocked out. You make my career sound good, it's pretty rubbish the way I'm telling it. I got knocked out early as a kid somewhere, and I went to caddy for someone else.
Yeah.
And I came back, and she said, that's fine. She said, but we pay for you every time to do this, and if you're not working hard enough, you're more worried about being with other people and watching their golf and whatever. And she said, that's fine. If you don't want to play. And I remember thinking, okay. Mum never said, she never even talked about golf because she knew nothing.
Yeah.
And that was kind of it. I was like, okay, you only need to tell me once. So that was that, really.
Well, it's interesting you say that. I mean, I played in the British Boys up at Gillen and I drew a guy called X Wenger. Should have known. In the first round. He was in there was a European boys team, he was in that. It was the only time, because we'd travelled up to Scotland, mm-hmm. It was the only time my mum watched me play golf. Mm-hmm. I got tumped 6 and 5, and on the 13th, I just hit this wild tee shot, and as I was walking down the fairway, you couldn't have your parents caddy for
no,
you.
No, yeah, they got the
same. My mum was just walking down, and she said, why have you done that? I swore. Yes. She never came to watch me again.
No, but she didn't.
It's like,
no.
Fucking mean it.
Yeah.
No, but,
parents are, they're extraordinary. I mean, I think it's very difficult to have any sort of successful career in any sport, especially, you know, without them. But I see it, you know, obviously now being older, watching the parents come through with some of the kids that are on tour, kids, you know, young women. And I just think, God, there for the grace of God, I'm so lucky that they were so supportive. But they let me do my own thing.
And understanding.
Understanding, but also, you know, let me, you know, some parents just never want to let their kid grow up.
Right.
So they're there with them, caddying for them, eat with them. I want, you know, my parents, I think when I was 16 or 17, that was the first time I went away and I stayed in a hostel where everybody stayed. And you learn, you know, you learn to deal with other people, with relationships and, you know, friendships and people you don't like. And
I see it sometimes if I walk to the local park, I'll see kids playing kids football. Mm. under eights, nines, and seeing some parents on the side, and I think, oh my good God.
No chance, have you?
No chance at all. No chance. Talking about that kind of thing, how do you, because you're still travelling, how do you cope with golf's a funny game, plays with your mind. You and I both know that. How do you cope with the mental pressures, that travelling, you know, in a suitcase, you know, you've seen so many airports, you know, how do you cope with that?
I think I'm just extremely lucky in that, my 38th year feels like my second or third.
Does it really?
Yeah, I don't think I ever realised quite how much I probably love golf. Because I've always just thought, well, it's a job.
You do love the game.
Well, apparently. but I must do, because it's, you know, even now when I'm commentating, or especially when I'm watching women's golf, you know, I hit balls yesterday, and I was, God, I hit it well. And you think, oh, come on, you can, you know.
I told you it was good.
No, you know what I mean, though. So when I'm commentating, I'm watching the girls play and thinking, yeah. And all that does is make me want to get out and practice.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not stupid. I'm 58, whatever, they're in there. I can't compete, but I can still play some, you know, the sort of golf that I want to play once I sort of get a bit fitter, because I said to you earlier, I'm going to have a slight problem with the hip.
Well, I'm in front of you on that journey.
Yeah, no, you are. And you survived it, so, I'm, you know, once I have the hip done, hopefully that will, you know, make a difference. But the travelling has never bothered me. The first 15 years when I played in the States, that was difficult because I loved our sport. I loved the Arsenal. You couldn't watch anything. There was nothing apart from American TV, right. American sport, which I just could never get into. So I would play a bunch of tournaments and then come home. And then go back and play a bunch of tournaments and then come home. I was always coming home. Yep. So I'd only ever play 15 tournaments in the States, keep my card, hopefully, normally, having played enough tournaments. But that's what you had to do to be an international member. You had to play 15. You couldn't play any less. So I'd do that for the first sort of 4 months of the year, maybe 5 months, and then come back and play in Europe for the rest of the year because I loved being at home. I love going to watch the football. I love all the stuff that...
You can do, course, here that you can...
Yeah, and now, but now you can do that...
Well, now there's supporters clubs all over the States as well.
And there's any channel that you can get, let's be honest. Yeah. You can watch every Arsenal game, no matter where you are in the world, as long as you're prepared to get up.
But is it your disposition that makes you... I mean, I've seen you get a bit feisty on a golf course. But you always strike me as half full rather than half empty. You've always seemed to have a smile on your face. Is that just your disposition? I mean, I'm going to mention a name, Lexi Thompson. You know, Lexi is talking about coming off the tour. I mean, I'm not sure how old she is. She's not
29.
Very old. 29 years of age. I appreciate she's probably earned quite a lot of money over the years. Oh. But you can quite clearly see that there's some anxiety there.
Yeah. I think there's a couple of things probably I would say. First of all, and I'm, in later life, I realise how incredibly lucky I am to have done what I've done. I think, you know, when you're in your 20s and people are saying, oh, you're so lucky, you're thinking, well, yeah, but I work my arse off to do that. And, you know, and we pay out money everywhere. Then you sort of realise, have I actually worked a day in my life? Don't get me wrong, there are pressures that other people could not deal with.
Yep.
But... you know, the fact that missing a cut and it's cost you $2,000 to play a tournament, that's not a great job, is it? If you went to your bank manager and said, look, I've got a great idea.
Yeah, great idea, yeah.
Might cost me a few quid to be, you know. So there's pressures that are not normal for regular people. But also, if you're good and, you know, you've won enough and you win a lot, and even if you...
So you have been good, haven't you?
I still think I should have been better. But yes, I know how lucky I am to have done what I've done. And the other thing I'll say is the social media. I'd hate to have been growing up now and playing golf.
Oh, well, I'm not in any kind of world that you're in, but for absolute sure. I mean, it's horrendous.
Yeah, I don't know how I would have survived, well, any of us would have survived, because, you know...
Well, I would have been in trouble.
Well, exactly. We would have all been in trouble. And we've done nothing wrong. No. We're good, you know.
I mean, everything is blown out of proportion. Everything is magnified. So... one of the questions I asked, and it's, I think lots of the, you know, lots of people that are now following this podcast play golf. How do you, when we're not playing well, I can say to my mates, I ain't playing for 2 weeks. I'm fed up with the game, but you can't. How do you, when you're out of form, how do you cope through that?
I'm a great believer in just hard work and but knowledge. Knowledge is the key, and that's what amateurs don't have. And that's why it's so. I mean, I've seen you play. You can play. Let's be honest, you can. But there is then you get chipping.
Get what?
The chipping.
No, that's coming out. The right. RNA, I've written to them. They're so going to
They're taking that out of the game, are they?
No chipping, no okay. more. What you do, excellent. If you miss the green,
okay. you can just pick it up.
Yeah.
Perfect. Okay. You put that's it on the, taken you put a little bit too long, to isn't it, really?
Yeah, but what you can't do is take the piss. You can't go and put okay. it close. Okay. But yeah.
Right. Back in the real world, though, where, let's be honest, you're chipping, it's because of technique. That where everything breaks down in golf is technique. I'm a huge believer in that. And I know people just, you know, the mind. Yeah, but if you work on the right things and you work hard enough and you use video and you know what you're looking for, I'm talking as a professional now,
yep.
but it still relates.
Well, you can relate.
It still yeah. relates. Yep. That's the way you get back in form. You work hard. You work your ass off. It's as simple as that. There are no easy answers. You're not just suddenly going to become confident. You only become confident by hitting good golf shots. Chicken and egg, which one comes first? Well, in my world, hard work, hitting the good golf shot because the technique is sound and you don't have to think about it because you've repeated it so often, you know it works. That's where you get the confidence from. And then you just hit that one shot. Doesn't matter whether you're me in a tournament or you and when you think, aye, aye.
Yeah, I've been there a few times.
Oh, that's a beauty.
It normally goes aye,
like?
Aye, and then it normally goes.
Yeah. But that lovely feeling of aye, aye, I know what that felt like. And you get that feel and it's you know, reproducing, basically. The technique is reproduced and then you get the feel that reproduces that. And that's the key. And that's what, if I see any sort of amateur player who can't, what's the reason they hit those bad shots? It's not the brain first. It's because they know the technique doesn't work.
But, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, I've played with you. You've extracted money out of my wallet on more than one occasion. I have, and I talk to amateur players who, be it with their driver, the irons, whatever. We seem to get scared when we're going to one of those shots we don't want, whether it's on a certain hole, a driver, or whatever. Professionals always seem to be, in charge of their mind. Maybe yeah. what's going on inside is different, but you seem calm.
But Blighty, that's like any job, isn't it? I'm sure if I saw you. When in the heat of, you know, a moment when you're working, you're in charge because you're absolutely confident in what you do. Well, that's no different to a professional golfer stood on a hole that is, you know, and let's be honest, we see them fall apart. We see golfers fall apart all the time.
Listen, I mean, it's sometimes I can't watch.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I've seen some situations and I think, and some of them, the people I know, and it breaks my heart because I know how difficult it is to get there in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a really, but the bottom line, you know, is it is an extremely difficult sport. But what amateurs do, and I would say this 99% on every sort of tough shot is slow down, whether it be. Preparation, so it's like yeah. I get scared, so you get tight, and the worst thing is the short game. Actually, I played with someone the other day in a pro-am.
Reminded me of you.
No, he really didn't
remind
really me.
Shit.
Of you. But is, you know, it's all about, with short game, people always want to help the ball up in the air. So you've got the club with the most loft, the one where you actually have to hit down to get the ball to run up the grooves to get any sort of spin, and everybody wants That's to help opposite. It up. Yeah. So you know, as I say, the technique is wrong, but people aren't, I think golf is one of those sports that is really taught very poorly by an awful lot of teachers still to this day.
So can I go and sue all those pros?
Yeah, you can. Yeah, right. Sod them. Sod a lot of them.
I'm gonna do that. And Danny Spencey,
especially
Danny Field and Jamie Spence. I'm coming from both.
Oh, and Danny,
you.
Don't get me started.
1987, you turned pro. We sit here today, 2024. Is the ladies' game in good shape?
The LPGA Tour is in very good shape, massively good shape. Financially, no question about that. The LET, the level of play on the LET is spectacular. The rewards for playing like that, in my opinion, are, and let's be fair, I don't play anymore, so I've got no gripe Excellent, with any.
Yeah.
They're appalling. I think the level of play is just stupendous, but for what they get, you know, get back for that. I mean, you've got tournaments, the big tournaments in the States now. You know, Chevron have taken their event to 9 million. You know, so you're looking at 3 million for winning.
As the kitty for the week.
Yeah, and our events, the difficulty with the LET is, you know, they're very much in bed with Aramco, which I understand. But every time an Aramco event comes around, which is has to be a team event as well as an individual event.
Pro-Am style format.
One amateur. But it's actually a team event with three pros and an amateur.
Yep.
But those three pros play the first 2 days together and against each other because their score counts. But it's 500 grand a piece, and 10 of those places in every Aramco event are taken by LPGA players because they're all paid to come to represent Aramco. Well, I can guarantee you, every week, 8 of the first 10 places...
going to be from the
States. So then you're playing for 500 grand, 8 of those first 10, so you're actually playing for £2.50. And you're shooting 15 under par. Yep. And you're making £2,000. £5,000. No. So, women's...
We hear this conversation in ladies' sport in general. You know, I know there's big conversations in ladies' football. Is that because... not wanting to be brutal, but people don't find it as I've played a lot of ladies golf.
Yeah.
With people who play like mixed golf, etc. I used to go and watch the Colgate European tournament from Sunningdale back in the day, Nancy Lopez. I know that the ladies professional sport is in a good place and ladies amateur golf is good. People can play the game. But is it because it's not as attractive to would-be sponsors? I mean, men's European tour golf is not in great shape, I don't believe, really.
Well, it's still, if you look at the purses they're playing for, they're tasty.
It's been a struggle, isn't it?
Blighty, to be perfectly honest, if I knew the answer to the question, we'd have done something about it, really. I think the difficulty is there are so many tours. Right? We're not just talking about... I mean, if you actually added up how many tours, and I'm talking about Challenge Tours, Tartan Tours, you name it, there's billions of them, and they're all shown on television. The difference with football is one football pitch. It's not difficult. Really doesn't cost that much to cover a football match. Yep. To cover a golf tournament individually, because, you know, a women's event is played individually, you cannot play them... side by side, it doesn't work, there's too many players. It's cost a fortune, and people just aren't outlaying it.
That's not coming out, so we're not getting the coverage.
I'm assuming, I can only, because if the level of play is just so good, really is. Now, the level of play on the LPGA is up another level again, but, you know, they are rewarded handsomely for that. They're astounding, they really are. But why the LET, you know, and we've had... You can't even blame the people in charge because we've had so many different types of people from all walks of life and it's never really thrived. And we've had, you know, Laura was world number one at a certain period of time. She's never thrived. So I really feel for, you know, this week watched, where were they? They were in Taiwan. And it's a $1 million event.
Yep.
So it's a good event. Obviously, a lot of Asian players, a lot of Chinese, Thai players were up there. But I think one of the girls, I think it's Virginia Carter, the Italian girl, that she's a really good player, just started to play really well. She finished tied fourth, which it sounds amazing, and you make $30,000. Now, I know that sounds like a lot of money to people, but after you've taken out your expenses, you'll end up with about 20 for an unbelievable week.
Yep. But that's when she's at her best.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, you can only compare it against other tours. Yeah. Otherwise, what do you compare it to?
Yeah.
And in the States, you know, that's $500,000. It's very difficult to see when it ever gets to the level where I would... And I'm not, you know, anybody listening to this thinking, oh, you're not comparing it to men's... No, I'm not. I don't expect it to even come close to men's golf.
You're just sitting there saying against ladies' golf in other countries, other continents, etc.
Well, or women's sport. For that level of play in any sport, it's the best. It, like I say, I don't think people have any clue how good it is now.
Well, talking about good, Solheim Cup, I did watch it recently. Sadly, the result didn't go our way.
Nearly did though, didn't it?
It was coming back, wasn't it?
It was coming back.
It was a lot closer than we thought it was going to be, certainly.
I tell you, if Lily Avu doesn't make birdie on the whole that tram liner on 17 to keep the match going, it goes down to Lynn Grant's game, and you just don't know what happens. We've seen it
in the Ryder Cup. Now, you've played on 8 separate occasions in the Solheim Cup. One of them, there's a picture I remember sending you I found at Loch Lomond, where, I mean, it would have been better if you'd had Aquaman suit on rather than it was, the weather was horrendous, wasn't it? But the Solheim's grown into something amazing now, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's unrecognisable. Quite honestly, but even, you know, even the Curtis Cup, I went to the Curtis Cup at Sunningdale.
Yeah.
A couple of weeks after.
Which we did win.
Yeah, which we did win. And I'm walking in there thinking, Jesus, this is like the fourth or fifth Solheim Cup I played in as an amateur event.
Yeah.
But to watch a Solheim Cup now, never in my wildest dreams did I think it could evolve into something this special. And it's still, you know, it doesn't have, it'll probably get there, unfortunately, but it doesn't have that fan nasty edge that the Ryder Cup now has.
Yep.
There can be a bit of needle.
Having been to many, many Ryder Cups home and away, I have been in atmospheres at Medina where it reminded me of coming out of some Arsenal matches.
Arsenal-Tottenham?
Well, not quite that bad. But seriously, there's been a couple of times and, you know, it does get very feisty. And I think the one when they go to Bethpage...
I just don't want to be involved at all.
I was there
with
my wife and sitting there thinking... I'm not really sure about this because it's not supposed to be like that. But the ladies won't get there. But it's getting edgy, isn't it?
It will do. I mean, you know, no, it may. Hopefully, it won't. It won't get there. But you've seen already the turnaround. And at the moment, I'd say it's in a great place because there's that edge, but there's not that nastiness. The players definitely. There's people want to win. At the end of the day, you've got the two best. You got the European and the American, the best players usually, you know, on both teams, and they'd play against each other all the time. That's the other thing you got to remember, which is a little bit different to how it was when I first started. So you've got that, you know. So when you lose that, you go back the next week and you're playing against those.
How do you get? I mean, I've been lucky enough to talk to Poulter about it in the past. How do you get that team camaraderie when it's an individual sport?
Yeah, I've got to be honest, we were very, very lucky from the off. And I think that's because in those first, I'd say the first 4 to 5, maybe even 6 Solheims, we had 6 Brits and Alfie and Lotta. And that was, so Alfie and Lotta were like, you know, they were great mates. And we got on like a house on fire with them. That's Lotta Neumann and Helen Alfredson. And then you had Laura, myself, Ali, Nicholas.
Did you enjoy it?
Oh, loved it. Absolutely loved it. Yeah, it was all of a sudden you had, you know, 6 to 8 mates who you were playing with.
Did you ever walk on the tee and think, oh shit, I'm not going to win this game today? Or is that not in your psyche?
Yeah, probably every time I played singles against Dolly Pepper.
she was feisty, wasn't she?
The thing is, I got on really well with her. And the worst thing about Dolly was I got drawn against what... I played 8 Solheim Cups. I got drawn against her, I think, 4 times. Now, I didn't play first. She didn't. I played everywhere. I played 5th, 6th, 3rd, 4th, whatever it was. And we used to get to Saturday evenings and everybody would sit down at the table and then everybody would be like, we don't have to ask who you got, we know you got. Like every time.
So viewers are going to want to know, listeners are going to want to know, did you beat her?
No. No,
never.
Not even came bloody close. And do you know the worst thing is, because I got on well with her, she was feisty, Dottie. She was really, and a lot of people didn't like her. I got on great with her. And she always ended up shaking my hand and saying, oh, sorry, mate. And
did she really? That was even worse. Wasn't it?
You know? So, yeah, that was my singles record in Solheim Cups is abysmal. I think I won once. And ironically, that was against Paddy Sheehan, who at the time was double US Open.
I know.
And British Open champion. So God knows where that came from. But I absolutely loved the team element. And my take away the first one, where everybody got smashed because it was like St. Trinian's against the who's who.
Yeah.
After that, my foursomes and fourballs was pretty decent. I just had so many halves. I've had about 8 halves.
Really?
And I play with a lot of different partners, but I love that. And I think I got to the Sunday of singles. I'm like, I've lost me.
Talking about playing against Graham, who's the best you've played with? Who's the best lady professional you play golf with?
Well, the one with the most ability, without a shadow of a doubt, is Laura.
Is it really?
Oh, yeah. She could do things that no one else could dream about.
I played in a charity day earlier in the year, and she played in front of me, and she was giving me abuse because I was winding her up about Liverpool, which she wasn't happy about. But yeah. I mean, some of the golf shots she hits are.
Yeah, and if you go back, you don't even have to go back to her heyday. There's an event we played. It was called the Handa Cup, and it was the rest of the world. This is seniors golf. The rest of the world against America. And myself and Laura were playing, and they have great formats. 9 holes scramble, 9 holes better ball.
Right?
Oh, it's just bliss. And we were playing against Rosie Jones and it was stroke play. And we were playing against Rosie Jones and Val Skinner, two of the hardest competitive people you'll ever meet. And it was a greensomes. And I'd hit a drive down this 10th hole as a par 5, which was a long way down, but in the rough. I'd hit one in the middle of the fairway. Laura had hit one down. I looked at it and I said to Laz, I can't get there. That's too thick. And so she's in the middle of the fairway on a downhill, side hill, 225 yards to the flag, water left, a huge great big tree in the middle of the fairway, and the pin tucked 3 from the left-hand side.
She found it.
And she said, I fancy this. And I thought... fancy it. I can't think of it. Anyway, she takes out the driver and I'm thinking, no chance.
I can see this shot bobbling along, bobble.
Knocks it to 3 feet, over everything. Looks, and this is when she's in her, maybe she was 53. Hit the shot that I just looked at and thought, well, there's no one else in the world. They can be 20, they can be any that can hit that shot.
So other than playing on the seniors, is after you see that golf shot, you think, well, she's a senior as well, but actually I'm going to go and do TV work.
Do you know, I know she just had that amazing capacity to hit shots that, like I say, no one else could hit. The most impressive golfer I ever played with was Beth Daniel.
Really?
Oh, she was astounding. She was like what you wanted to be.
I had the hots for Jan Stevenson.
Yeah, I bet you did.
Four at the time, and I used to play them, and I used to say they were the best, and they weren't. I used to follow them around the Sunnydale. I think they're good players. They are. TV work. I'm biased because I call you my friend. You're good at it. I think for me, watching any pundit, they've got to have played the game. It's the same in business. You know, I've come across sales and marketing directors that have never sat on site, and I think, how would you know what to do? It's a bit like a plumber. Could you imagine going to the dentist to actually get the dentist to give you a run over as a hygienist when they've never actually studied anything to do with dentistry?
Mm.
So I love people that know the game. Do you enjoy it?
I love the commentary, yeah. The studio sort of guest stuff is very different. I do a lot of that. I'd love to do more commentary. And I think it very much depends who you're working with. If you have a really good rapport. I mean, personally, I think, you know, when I'm watching golf, how's the best way to put this? It can be quite boring, let's be fair. It's not the most scintillating game in the world.
It's only when you're watching me.
No, that's actually quite entertaining, to be perfectly honest. But, so I want to be entertained. So I love listening to, pundits that are having a good time.
Yeah.
Now, they don't need to be, you know, ripping each other left, right and centre, but I want to chuckle. I want to listen to Tony Johnston make some sort of comment about some bird or whatever. I love it. I absolutely love it. And everyone I listen to says, "Oh, they definitely sort of, you know, they're definitely in bed with that sort of commentary." I'm not sure we're, you know, always allowed. Well, I don't know if you're allowed to do it. That's not the. It sometimes that's not the way you're supposed to commentate.
No, I think again we woke world. I'd probably last 2 minutes on it. I'd get in trouble. But woke world, I agree with you. To have somebody talking about, you're right, it can be boring. They're walking down a fairway. There's not a lot to say. But just to actually point out something, especially in some of these countries where they're beaming from, where there's some great wildlife around, why not?
Yeah.
Or something funny is happening, seeing a little kid with a plastic golf club bashing a ball around.
Yeah, or, you know, the whole point to me of having pundits that have been there and done it is to hear the odd story about, you know, what did you, you know, I mean, I love Wayne Riley. But I'm not sure people actually realise what a good player he was.
Well, I
think
a great story about him playing in a, I don't know how he got involved in it. He played in a charity day for a footballer at Stevenage Football Club. I played with him and John Watson, another guy, and all of us were single figures. And we stood on the first tee, and we all licked T-shirts. And it was a team. He went, oh, it's going to be like that today, then, is it? We all looked at each other to say, we thought that would be okay. But he was a bit spiky. I think he probably had a bad day the day before. And we got to about the fourth hole, and it's 225 yards into the wind. And we walked onto the tee, and he said, so this is, with his accent, this is a one iron, cut it in low, swing it round to the... And I turned around and said, well, yeah, if you've got that in the locker, but I don't think you have. Oh, my God, did it kick off. He took this one iron out, pinged one iron out of his bag, he threw his clubs down on the tee, and he hit the best golf shot I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
Well, he did win events, didn't
he? Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He was a really good player. So, you know, I think people just think the way he talks about stuff on the golf course is you know, it's put on, or it isn't. That's how he sees the game. And I love listening to that type of commentary. I'm in full agreement with you. I think it's very difficult to listen to people commentate on the game that haven't walked the walk.
Yeah, well, I just don't get it. I get where you can introduce people. But if you haven't played at the A level, professional level, or in sports that haven't got...
Let me rephrase that, because that came across very wrong, because I'm just thinking about, you know... So you have lead.
Yes.
And that's got nothing to do with being a pundit.
No.
Nothing at all.
Absolutely
right. So as a lead, then that's a totally different...
But the moment we're talking about someone's feeling, someone's shot, someone's you have got to have
You're the one that's... Yeah, exactly.
Whether that's kick a rugby ball, throw a rugby ball, bowl a cricket ball, whatever it is.
Yeah.
I just think you need somebody on the other side of that that's actually been there.
Or know how it feels when you've got one of those coming down at you under a mile an hour, or, you know, standing on the first tee at a Solheim Cup.
Exactly,
I'm thinking
that. When, how are you going to feel?
Yeah.
And actually, that's actually what we want to hear. What is that feeling like?
Oh, bloody hell. Flipping awful. The first one wasn't so bad because there was no one there at Lake Nona. Absolutely no one. One man and his dog. But the further we, you know, got into it...
More and more.
I'm trying to remember the first one. Dalmahoy was amazing because we won, but there weren't huge crowds. But it may be... So Muirfield Village, I think that was the one after that. I remember walking on the first tee and all of a sudden everything, you know, is lined both ways. And I remember thinking, Jesus Christ, this could be trouble.
Well, you see,
I would not be standing there if I were you.
Yeah, you see, that's me. You see, they're in no danger at all. It's the ones three fairways away they're in problem with me.
Yeah.
But, talking about problems, charities, I know you give your time up for charities. I've been on a number of charity days with you. Is there any charities that are close to your heart? Any particular ones that you look out for? Or?
I think anything to do with kids, really, is the thing. Any sort of, especially when you Great Ormond Street, things like that, when you see young children that, you know, they haven't even had a life and they've got a drip fixed up to them and they, you know, any sort of... anything. It doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be cancer, but cancer, obviously. But I think the older you get, the more things hit home, because obviously you then have maybe family members, or, you know, my brother was ill a couple of years ago and went through a really bad time. At the moment, touch wood, everything is great.
Good.
But,
good.
You know, it's not, it's you know, never out of the woods sort of thing. So those sort of things. But certainly, any sort of kids charity. Actually, the first LPGA championship I think I won... at French Lick, that was sponsored, and the St Jude Hospital there.
Yeah.
The kids used to come out they'd start us on the first tee or all that sort of
that
stuff.
Well.
Oh, it's extraordinary,
you, isn't it?
Extraordinary. And we'd have a dinner in the evening, and a lot of the time they'd have kids that have survived, and him and their families would come up onto the stage and
tell us stories.
And honestly, it's not a dry eye in the house. It's extraordinary. And I think the thing that always gets you is how children are. No matter how ill they are, they're so positive. They don't have that sort of, you know, when you get older, you're sort of...
My leg hurts.
Yeah, and you look at them, you just think, Jesus, how can you be so positive at such a young... And, yeah, those sort of... any charity, really, that, you know...
Well, I know for a fact you give your time up, and I've played with you in events like that, and I know you're brilliant there. It would be remiss of me. Obviously, I've got this little snifty red number on for you. Mm. It'd be wrong of me not to touch on our passion, or one of our passions. We're in a second international break. Why they don't Flipping bar out. Them? I mean, there is nobody I know that likes them. I'm probably going to get loads of people tell me now, but I feel as though I've had me right arm chopped off.
Sick today. Honestly, I was watching Declan Rice thinking, well, because obviously thinking Saka's out for however long, touch wood, he's not. But watching Declan Rice the other day thinking,
don't kick
okay,
the ball.
Is anybody ever going to take that bloke off? Ever? Is there any chance that he doesn't play 90 minutes ever? And I can't remember who I said. They said, well, he plays 90 minutes. Right. I said, yeah, we pay his wages.
But, it's funny, isn't it? It's so many people I know, and England are going through. But we're coming towards the middle end of October. $1 million question. Well, $1 billion question, I suppose, in this day and age. Are we going to win the league this year?
I think the next month... And the last month has been extraordinary, but the next month is paramount. If we can get past, you know, Liverpool at home, Newcastle away, Chelsea away, and Shakhtar at home, without any too much damage. But do you know what? You know what really bugs me. I know they do this on purpose because I know that for a fact. Because I know Mike Dean, the referee, and I know. People hate Arsenal. The referees hate Arsenal. He's told me they hate Arsenal.
Trust me. I listened to his podcast he did with Simon Jordan, and I like him a little bit more, but I know that you know him. But that referee we had against Man City the other week, I've never seen all of the stadium except for... Was it Man City? I think it was Brighton.
Yeah, Kavanagh.
Seriously.
Yeah, you honestly think, but what really annoyed me was after that Man City game, no one mentioned the fact we'd had Tottenham away, at Atlanta away, and Man City away. They can and down to you know.
Are we taking over from Millwall? Where everyone hates us.
I'm just so sick of pundits that not and thank God for Wrighty. I mean, thank God he's still on there. You know, singing like a great bloke. I got a great story. Well, it's not really a story about him, but I love him so much. I was in the airport about 18 months ago, and I was just sat in, I can't remember where I was going, Korean Airlines, I think, and that's why I was so surprised. And I was going to Korea, and I've got up, just thought I'd have a cheeky little glass of champers before, and I'm walking to get, had to go out the door to get the champers. He walks in, and he goes, ah! And I'm thinking... Right, and there's all these people looking, and he's come over and give me the biggest hug. Yeah. And said, right, and I'm just like, and they're all looking, thinking, who the hell are you? And even my mates are thinking,
do you know what you should have done to
him? He's brilliant.
No, you should have
him.
Said, excuse me, who are you?
Who are you?
No, he's a nutter.
Just genuine.
He is lovely.
Genuine, brilliant bloke, isn't he? But if we can get through that and keep our squad fit, I'm going to say it's got to happen sooner or later.
Well, I hope you're right. I didn't say this to you, but I normally do to guests when we sit down. I say, do you know what? When time flies, I could sit and talk to you all day long. Fortunately, I'm going to get more of an opportunity because I know you're hanging around because we've got another podcast coming up. We're going to go out and have a bite to eat. Thank you for your time.
Absolute pleasure.
You are a legend. You might feel as though you could have done better, but when you're sitting there after your hip goes well, because it will, and you're sitting there and just... mulling back in time, you'll realise that you were fucking good at this game and still can play. And it was right what I said. You are a lovely person. I think the world of you.
Thank you
very much for coming on.
Thank you, Blasey. Really enjoyed it.
My pleasure. Viewers, listeners, welcome to the end of another episode. Trish has got some great stories about golf. She can also play the game properly. Forgive us for our red eyes. We're probably a little bit biased. And the good news is that I'm going to have a couple of chipping lessons from Trish. Spencey, Fieldy, you're gone. And look out for my medal scores next year because I complain now. Take care. See you soon. Lots of love.